You're listening to the TV Obsessive Channel, presented by TVObsessive.com.
Okay, welcome back to the TV Obsessive Podcast. Here today for episode 40. As always, I'm Cameron Crane, executive editor for TVObsessive.com, joined by Ryan Kirksey, writer and contributor for the site. How are you doing today, Ryan?
I'm doing really well here in early March. You and I were just kind of riffing on the weird weather happening right now as we transition from winter to spring. Some might say we're in the liminal space between winter and
Yeah,
spring.
We are. We're definitely in a liminal space, at least here, where it's like not winter and it's not spring. So yeah,
Right,
this is
exactly.
A good use of the word indeed. So yeah, we're going to continue talking about Constellation on Apple TV Plus. Hopefully people are watching along with us. Episode 5 this week, which came out on Wednesday, recording this on Friday. 5 miles out, the sound is clearest. I like this episode. We'll talk about it in the latter part of the pod. First, as per usual, hit on some recent TV news items and chat about what we've been watching a bit and so on. So what do you got this week, Ryan? It's March 8th today.
Yeah, March 8th. Well, I guess 2 days away. This is the big weekend news. You're going to watch the Oscars this year? We got Barbenheimer. We've got a lot of interesting things. People think Oppenheimer's going to sweep. You're going to be watching this weekend?
I have no definite plans, right?
Right?
Like, I don't have an Oscar watch party I'm going to, which I did one time. Did you ever do this? And there was
I've done these, yeah.
It wasn't bingo.
You fill out the sheet,
yeah,
the
we
pitch.
Had a betting contest or something.
Yeah.
I don't think we were betting money. And I did very poorly because I'd seen like two of the films. So, I might watch it. I'm looking for something to do. It is kind of a cultural event, as it were. Do you plan to watch it?
Yeah, I probably will. For the first time, my kids are interested in watching. They haven't seen Oppenheimer, but they've seen Barbie, and they've seen some of the movies that are.
Have they seen Poor Things?
Not some Poor Things.
Come on,
but,
kids,
know,
let's watch Poor Things.
Yeah, not that. No, my son, who's real young, was thrilled to know that Godzilla Minus One got a nomination, right? So he's excited about that. So we'll probably watch. I did note that since bottoming out in 2020, it is on the upswing of 3 straight years of ratings increase. So interested to see how that happens this year. Probably we'll go up again with these extremely popular movies.
I'm feeling out of touch in asking this question because I should already know, but is there a host this year?
Yeah, Jimmy Kimmel's doing it again.
Jimmy Kimmel again.
He's
Didn't
kind
they
of
do?
Yeah, he's on the retainer now, I think. He just does it all the time.
Didn't they do it 1 year without a host? Was that 2020?
Yeah, there was a weird like train station year where they're kind of like in pods or different places. There was a couple of years, obviously, where the host is just bombed. There was, of course, the Chris Rock year, which we all know what happened there. So it's they've gone back to the old reliable.
Old reliable Jimmy Kimmel, who is fine. He does a good job. It's, Jimmy Kimmel is so funny to me because at this point, probably most people know him from Jimmy Kimmel Live.
Right.
But there's still part of me that's like, I remember the man show.
Yeah. Oh, man.
Every time I see him.
He
and
probably
it's like,
wishes you didn't, but
probably,
yeah.
I mean, talk about a show. People are always like, you couldn't make a show like that now. I don't think you could make that show. I don't think you'd get greenlit if that's what we mean. Like, I don't think they would. Anyhow, what else do we got here? And some other stuff in the news to hit on.
Yeah, several things. I mean, lots of the news just keeps coming fast and furious about shows starting, production getting underway, cast lists. I guess in terms of the most popular of these shows, we know now that House of the Dragon will come out in June. There were some reports it was going to be August, but now it's going to come out in June. Still misses the, I guess, this year Emmy deadline, but going to be its tentpole summer show again.
Yeah, and I don't know that this was, I don't know that this is completely official, but the Warner Brothers executive said it.
Yeah.
So we believe what J.B. Perrette, I think is the name here. It's been said that it will be June, no precise date. this is a less than official announcement, but I thought, yeah, I mean, worth mentioning. Presumably, people are looking forward to House of the Dragon. I know you've been rewatching some Game of Thrones. Did
Yes, I have
you
been,
go
but
all the way?
through about season five, my plan is to. I mean, I got an ambitious goal. We'll see if this happens, especially now that it's coming in June. My plan is to rewatch Game of Thrones, rewatch the first season of House of the Dragon, and I have now the House of the Dragon text source material that I'm reading through as well. So I'm going to try to get through all of that stuff before June. But I'm going to tell you what I hope happens, because this
Okay.
happened last year with the two movies that was so interesting. I hope that House of the Dragon and the Bear come out on the same day. And they just battle it out for a week. Just see who wins. I mean, this is the stuff we need.
Sure. House of Dragon, though, will definitely be weekly. And as we've already griped about, they're going to give us the whole season of the Bear all at once again. And everyone's going to say, wow, this is the best show of the year. And we'll talk about it for 2 days. And
Exactly. No, it's smart on HBO part because they'll coming out in June, they'll get the whole summer. Will be theirs, that will belong to House of the Dragon.
yeah, there's some other, there's a lot of good stuff, I think, on the horizon. And it feels to me like we've been in a little bit of a lull. Like, so maybe this is the lull that comes from the strike, last year's strikes. But I don't know. I'm excited about Fallout. I think we previously hit on that show Sugar coming to Apple TV Plus with Colin Farrell. There was a trailer for that this week. That looks pretty good. A bunch of other stuff. Speaking of strikes, though, this is way in advance of like, but hang on, don't lose sight. There's still a union that has yet to come to a new contract with the AMPTP. This would be the IATSE and the Teamsters, right? So the behind the scenes aspect, your stage hands, all of that kind of stuff. They're in the midst of negotiations. I was reading the negotiations are maybe a little bit stalled, and I started to feel worried, and they've got until July, but I just thought this was worth mentioning given that I read it in the news this week.
Yeah, and I will plead ignorance on this. If they don't come to an agreement with these production crews, the craft services, all the other pieces that go into making this show, I mean, they can't film, right? They can't, they're not going to go out and, just have the producers and directors do it. I mean, these are people that the actors will be available, the directors will be available, but clearly the people who actually shoot the thing wouldn't be available.
Well, I don't, I mean, or at least you wouldn't have things like props and
Yeah,
sets
exactly.
and, you know, yeah, really, this would threaten to shut down production again if they do go on strike this summer. Conceivably they could hire scabs or something, but you would have to have some kind of situation where like everyone was okay with these being scabs. And I do know that the unions here were out in solidarity with SAG-AFTRA and the WGA, and so you probably expect the converse should push come to shove. So hopefully they come to a fair and equitable agreement in the near future. Give the IATSE give them a good contract. Come on.
And you're right to have potentially and assuredly the writers and the actors behind them in this fight should go a long way to help to get it done. Hopefully, we don't have to go through another summer of sitting through a strike.
Yeah, absolutely. No more delays. Now, speaking of things that are affected by delays, Foundation, we've been kind of hitting the speed, or I've been on the speed at least, and I don't know that it's been the most meaningful news in the world. This might be the biggest thing that, given the delays in production of season three and then some of these other things that we've hit on in previous episodes of the pod, with worries about the budget and yada, yada, yada. So apparently, the headline is that they replaced David S. Goyer as director of season three with Tim Suthan, sorry. But reading the details, it's a little less clear to me. Like, if that's really across the board, there are some episodes that are like half finished, and they're switching the director to finish them for the filming in Prague or something like that. But David S. Goyer is still on as writer and executive producer. So
So, as someone who you have not seen this show before, I know that you have seen all of it. Does this concern you to see this news, or is this just a product of we had to do this because of scheduling conflicts, strike, residual effects, things like that?
it concerned me a little bit, particularly when I saw the headline and I have my eye out for more information about how concerning this should be. Because this is one of these situations. David S. Goyer, as I understand it, I mean, he's like the showrunner, has a plan for 8 seasons of the show and all of that. But it seems that that's, I think that's still the case. And what we're talking about is the actual practical work of directing, maybe only some episodes, so maybe it's not a big deal, really. Maybe we're
I
getting in the
see.
weeds. But what would be a big deal is if he was no longer kind of the main creative force running the show, then you'd say, well, what's going to happen then?
If there was a falling out and he left, that makes sense. Okay, good. That should, I think, from an outsider's perspective, should give a little bit of not satisfaction, but understanding that, okay, we're still in pretty good hands here.
I think so. I think so, right? Like, again, reading the details, I ultimately think, well, maybe this isn't a huge deal, right? But it did strike me as a little bit of a worry. And there's, part of that is it has to do with them trying to cut costs in a certain way, apparently. So, like, there are some little worries I'm feeling about whether the quality of Foundation is being undermined. And how secure is the future of the show beyond season three, and so on. So, but hopefully all is well. I mean, apparently they filmed like half of it before the strikes shut things down, and now they're getting back to work, gonna wrap it up. So we may well have that by the end of the year. I don't know.
That's great. We need more of this. We've had so many updates of 2025. We need some quality stuff coming out the end of 2024.
Yeah.
That's what I'm afraid the lull might happen, right? Quite frankly, is fall of 2024, before we get into all this stuff that's been announced for 2025.
Yeah, we'll see. I don't know though. They've got a good amount for spring. So, at least it feels like in the meantime, right? Fox, I put this on here just because we've already talked about these shows.
Good.
High
Oh,
ratings
I'm so happy
for
to see
The
this.
Floor and Next Level Chef. We are men of the people, Ryan.
I mean, I knew it all along. You love The Floor. I love Next Level Chef. Next Level Chef apparently got the Super Bowl bump, and people have kept watching it since then. There was a fantastic episode on last night. I mean, these guys are great. You watched The Floor, and then I guess the finale has come for that. But I don't know. Are these our guilty pleasure shows, or are these more just like, I don't care what you call it, I just love
I mean, I don't really like
them.
the phrase guilty pleasure. Like, I don't like the idea that I should feel guilty about things I like. But even with that said, I understand the concept, and I would still say no. I mean, it's like, it's a game show, that sort of thing. I think, where I would apply the term is if I were like, man, I've been watching The Vampire Diaries.
I could see that. Yeah, that would be a hidden guilty pleasure, I would imagine.
I just revealed to the world
Oh,
I've
there
seen The
you
Vampire Diaries.
go. Okay,
Pretty
I was happy to see.
entertaining.
Yeah, absolutely, and it's good to be a part of the crowd sometimes. These are things worth watching. Glad that we're on board with these. What else is going on? Every week you seem to find an interesting headline, something I've never heard of before. And this time you found another sort of adaptation of a book called Murderbot. So please enlighten me about Murderbot that's apparently been casted and is coming.
So I am not, I haven't read the books. Okay, I'll just put that right. But kind of hitting my radar. Sounds interesting. It's a series of books written by Martha Wells, and Apple TV Plus is adapting this into a TV show. So another science fiction TV show, but also maybe somewhat horror. It, Murder Bot gets to it fairly well,
Yeah.
right? It's basically about a robot or android and murders. The other thing I thought was kind of interesting here to hit on is they cast Alexander Skarsgård in lead role,
Yeah.
which I like him,
Yeah, so I'm in now. Yeah.
but it caused at least a little bit of controversy in the fandom, apparently, because Murderbot does not have a gender, and Murderbot's preferred pronouns are it.
Oh, okay. I also saw in this is Deadline article you sent over. Another thing it prefers, apparently this AI or this disruptive technology, all it really wants is to be left alone and watch futuristic soap operas. I mean, that's a wrinkle to.
But it's on demand to go do murders, I guess. I mean, it sounds like an intriguing show,
Yeah.
some novelty to the premise, and the cast looks pretty good. Sabrina Wu, some other people here, people may or may not recognize. Alexander Skarsgård would be
Yeah.
the big headlining name here.
No, that, like I said, I'll be in now with that, and we have long discussed our affinity for Apple TV science fiction. They've done well so far.
Yeah, they seem to be doubling down on it too, which I
They
like.
really, I mean,
They're just making more.
yeah, we're good at the iPhones. Why not make the iPad and everything else?
Did I mention on here that they renewed Invasion for season three? They did.
Oh, okay. I didn't know
So
that.
it's like, even if the show's not really all that good, like, oh, go ahead, finish
Just why not? Why
it
not? Well, also on Apple TV, this is one I put on there because I'm excited about. We got a trailer for the new season of Loot coming out in April. This is the Maya Rudolph show about a billionaire wife who splits from her husband and starts to try to turn her life around to do good things, be philanthropic and be a good person. And we got a trailer for this. It's coming next month. This is from Alan Yang, the guy who was one of the lead writers on Parks and Rec. So very, very funny show. So glad to see a second season coming. There's a trailer out there. I mean, it's just it for as sort of heartwarming as it is, it's also a very funny and poignant look at let's just spend the whole episode satirizing billionaires. I mean, for nothing else, it's a good reason to watch it.
Well, yeah, you mentioned this before. I should take up the recommendation. I haven't as of yet, but season two is coming out. What's the other one? Just going to go off script. It's not in my notes, but the other Apple TV Plus show coming up, premiering, is called Palm Royale. That's another one
Palm
where I'm just intrigued by the cast
Royale.
more than
Okay,
anything.
okay.
It's got like Kristen Wiig, Laura Dern,
Oh, I love
Carol
her.
Burnett,
Well,
like
okay.
some other names too. And I was like, well. But yeah, I don't know. The premise sounds interesting enough, I guess. This woman's like trying to work her way into high society in Palm Springs, or whatever. Yeah. I watched the trailer and I'm like, kind of hope the show's better than the trailer. And I don't know with the cast.
Yeah.
Come on, man.
Well,
Laura
that would be
Dern
another
and Carol Burnett. Come
yeah, I
on.
was going to say that would be another interesting niche for Apple to find themselves in of the mockumentary style of high society and billionaires, things like that. That'd be a great place to position themselves.
Yeah, absolutely. On the other hand, I think we talked about the new look a little bit. I haven't watched it, but just going on what I've heard out in the world, it seems like it doesn't feel like it's a hit.
No, not
It's
heard a
it,
thing about it.
the only thing I've heard about it is like it's not very good.
Yeah.
So I mean, I don't know. I wouldn't prejudge things myself. I think if you're interested in the show, watch it anyway because maybe you're the audience for it. But I did see some
Yeah, you just don't
people.
seem to see it in the conversation. I think you and I are pretty tuned into that. I just don't seem to see it really anywhere. Like
Right. Yeah. The only way I've seen it is kind of negatively, which is
Can't hit a home run
unfortunate.
on everything.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so. Well, sort of segueing into a little bit about what we're watching, did you see this news about Shogun, which is now through three episodes? And one sort of piece, really nicely spun PR here. One side, you got to really, really read into the details, but apparently this is one of the most popular FX Hulu shows that they've ever seen. Obviously, certainly since The Bear. 9 million global views for these first few episodes of Shogun. But then you look at it and you say it's the most watched Disney General Entertainment show, which basically means no Star Wars, no Marvel, no Pixar, no National Geographic, none of like the IP stuff. If you get past all that, then it's the most watched thing of Disney.
All right. They got their Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly.
What they wanted.
Which did you
Success.
see that the folks that are running this show did an interview and they said, you actually shouldn't compare us to Game of Thrones. We think we're more like Succession and House of Cards. That's what they came out and said.
Okay.
Not that anybody buys that, but that's what they
I
said.
mean, all right.
So I've
Compares to
watched these first
Rome.
three and they're very good. They're very Game of Thronesy, in terms of positioning for power, intrigue, violence, sex, all the things that you would think of in terms of Games of Thrones, Game of Thrones. But really just one of those shows where you feel like you are in 17th century Japan when you're there. Very well done. And man, Cosmo Jarvis is I mean, he's gunning for the awards at the show, and he is just incredible so far. I'm really liking his performance.
Well, yeah, I still need to watch that too. I don't know. I need to find
Yeah.
time to watch several hours of
Yeah.
Shogun.
It's not a short commitment, I will say that.
Yeah. I checked out The Regime,
As did
which
I.
was you did? What did you
I
think of
did.
it?
I did watch. I was for the first, I don't know, 85% of that show, I was very worried about what we were going to be getting for six
Yeah.
episodes. And then it sort of pivots, obviously, without giving anything away. And I was very happy that they made the pivot.
Yeah, I kind of, yeah, 85% is probably about right. And then I spent the episode thinking, this is bad.
Yeah. Yep.
And what is it trying to do? And who cares? But, you know,
Exactly.
like, I mean, it was, now I should make the note. Kate Winslet in the show is wonderful. Like the acting performance, I think, is wonderful throughout. And
Absolutely.
it seems like this is what a lot of the reviews have said too. And you're like, right, I'm right on board with what all the critics seem to think, where they say Kate Winslet, great show, meh.
Yeah.
But I do agree that
Exactly.
by the time the first episode made that pivot and it got to the end, I was like, oh, now I'm kind of intrigued. You know, I think I might have to keep watching. So there's that
Yeah,
at least.
and apparently, again, there's Hugh Grant is going to show up. I mean, this has been announced. This is not spoiling anything. He
Right.
is not in the show yet, but he's been announced as a pretty interesting character. So he's still to come. There's some good things that could be ahead. It's only five more episodes, limited series, six episodes. So I'll probably tune in for the rest of it just to see if it picks up that same momentum of the last few minutes of the first episode.
Probably will too. We have an article on the site on tvobsessive.com written by Clay Dockery on the first episode. Talking to Clay, I don't know that Clay's going to write more, which I'm always fine with. You know, if you really don't want to, you don't have to force it. You know, and you know, publish negative articles for 5 weeks or something like that. But we were talking about it. You know, the kind of big concern that I continue to have is the show's billed as a satire of what?
Of
I'm
what
still not
of
entirely sure what the target of the satire is after one episode, so.
Yeah, it'd be one thing if you had just like this, Putin knockoff and sort of clearly was pointing in that direction, but I just can't tell. Like it's sort of this general Eastern European country with a non-specific ruler. It doesn't really remind me of anyone. So
Yeah.
like I said, it made an interesting turn. I'll give it another episode. It's HBO Sunday night, so I guess I trust it. So we'll see.
Yeah. So speaking of regimes, I don't know that's a good segue. The State of the Union address was last night. I did watch it. You're telling me before we got on, you looked at highlights or whatever, but you
Yeah,
did.
I caught the reactions and the clips and the
Fair enough.
podcasts about the State of the Union.
I am the kind of person, I enjoy a good speech.
Yeah,
You know,
yeah.
so, you know, I mean, going back to when I was undergrad and I took classes in rhetorical theory and stuff like that. So, like, I'm serious. Like, I enjoy watching Nixon's checkers speech.
Oh, yeah.
It should not, you know, the content of that, no, like, he shouldn't have wiggled out of things, clearly. Like, look what happened later, you know?
So you, so
Oh.
your faith in our political system has been restored after last night's speech, I take
No, I wouldn't say that, but
it.
I wanted to see how Biden did, and I just kind of, I don't know, wanted to see how it went. I don't at all intend here to get caught up in political issues or anything like that, but at the level of giving a good speech, I think you did a good job. I give them some props strategically because I have the feeling that they were intentionally goading people into booing him so that he could respond to hecklers. Like, I actually think, and when he was responding to hecklers, it was like, he's sharp, he's tough, you know. So there was that, and then the response. I have to say something about Katie Britt's response. Did you watch this? I mean,
I have also seen clips of this. I know exactly where you're going.
I almost don't know the clips are sufficient because there's such like tonal whiplash between her being smiling and kind to all of a sudden going like, everyone's going to die. And you're like, what are we doing? You know, and like she's smiling, like it was,
I was listening to a recap podcast, and they said we have been a part of this is a group of people that used to work in the White House. We have been a part of these for a number of years, and we have never seen a response quite like this. I mean, just
I thought it was campy. That was the first thing I could. A couple of things I saw on social media. I can't decide what my favorite was. One of them was comparing it to the student overacting in season one of Barry, who's told to take it down from 11 to 7. So I have like this acting student energy.
There you go. There you go.
But the quip I enjoyed the most probably was someone who asked, you know, why is Katie Britt about to let me know about a once in a lifetime opportunity to become my own boss. Just had that kind of energy. It was, again, not getting into the substance of what's
No.
being discussed, but just as a TV viewing experience, I found it really weird. And then there's also a bunch of stuff about like she's supposed to be at her kitchen table and it kind of looked like a Zoom background. And then they put out some other pictures today where it looks like maybe it's a fabricated set and there's like, there's nothing in the kitchen except a tea kettle.
Apparently, somebody, I would need to verify this, but apparently someone from the New York Times put out on social media that, the Republican machine was putting out quotes about the speech before she even gave it, like, oh, it's the best speech I've ever heard. It's the modern equivalent of Reagan City on a Hill speech, all this stuff before
Really?
she even gave it,
Well, you know, like maybe they read the speech.
Yeah,
And
exactly.
that's what I say to people. If you want to be a part of this conversation, you can't read that one. You got to watch it because
Not at all.
that's the level where you're like, whoa. But you know, the responses are always weird and
They are.
bad.
They are.
It feels like they always
It's
are.
a weird tradition. It's odd that they happen. They're often written well in advance of us, the understanding what the content of the speech is. So,
And it's always like we're going to get some rising star of the opposition party who gives the response to the State of the Union and it torpedoes their career and you never hear about them again. You know? And so like if you're an aspiring politician and they ask you to do this, my advice is decline.
Decline.
Just don't.
Remember Cory Booker was supposed to be the savior of the Democratic Party a few years ago? Well, he did it.
No, there's idea like Bobby Jindal. There was also one year where I think the Democrat was like some Kennedy whose name I don't remember, some young Kennedy. You know what I mean? And they're like, you're right. Oh, yeah, he's gone. Can't even
Gone.
remember his name.
Oh, boy. All right. That's what I, yeah. I guess let's just be ha happy that only happens once a year.
Now we're into the election season officially,
Yeah,
you know,
officially,
so
we're in it.
we've
Yeah.
got that going for us.
Great.
You watch the Daily Show with Jon Stewart, you know,
Yes,
give him
yes.
some of his material.
Every Monday, or actually, I should say every Tuesday morning, I catch it on the stream and skip the commercial and skip the interview. So it's a nice 18 minutes every Tuesday morning.
Cool. All right. Well, you want to say anything about this week's Curb, or
I
you got any
just
hands?
you know, my weekly reminder that you need to watch
I know I do.
it.
Which should I prioritize, Ryan? Curb or Shogun?
Oh, I would do. Oh man,
Okay.
do Curb, do Curb.
Okay.
If for just the relevancy to what's happening now and getting to see some Richard Lewis in it, I would do Curb.
Yeah. Should catch up, be there for the finale and all of that. But okay, so we'll shift gears to talk about Constellation. Again, on the table today is episode 5 Miles Out. The sound is the clearest. And all spoilers are on the table through episode 5 of Constellation. On the other side of the brief musical interlude, we'll plug in here. So beware. See you in about 10 seconds.
Okay, welcome back. This is time for Constellation Episode 5, 5 Miles Out. The sound is the clearest. This one is also written by Peter Harness, also directed by Oliver Hirschbiegel. It's a fairly more straightforward episode in terms of plot as some of our past ones. After injuring Magnus at the end of episode 4, Joe takes Alice, and it's basically a road trip the rest of the episode as they make their way to the cabins and some of the scenes that we think we saw in the first couple of episodes of the series. Joe makes a stop and steals the Cal device, which we need to talk about their security around what's probably a tens of million dollar piece of technology. She enlists Elliot to help her track down some astronaut medical records. She visits the Skagerrak Marine Observatory in Denmark and learns about their ghost tapes. She talks to Alice about what she really is fearful of, which ends up being the Valia vision of a dead cosmonaut. And then she hears proof on the tapes by Rena, who may or may not be the Valia, dying in space. Henry struggles with Bud after the Cal goes missing, as Bud is trying to break into his reality and becoming more and more aggressive as he does so. At the end of the episode, at the cabin where Joe and Alice have found themselves, Joe hears Alice's voice both in the cabin, both on the tapes that the observatory had of her in space, but the Alice who is there with her says that that is not her. Okay, so we got some probably
Yeah.
a narrower group of plot or plot points than we've had in previous episodes, but a lot of pieces within that. Should we start with this trip, sort of how they end up at the cabin? You know, this cabin sort of refers back to the end of the or the first few episodes. Should we sort of go beat by beat on their trip after she
I
takes
don't know. I mean,
Alice?
the cabin, yeah, it's a question ultimately, because it does feel like that lines up in a certain way, but then I think it's ultimately a question as I kind of thought it through. It's one of those things, as I was writing my article for the week, at first I thought, oh, well, it loops back around. And then as I got into it, I started thinking, like, wait a minute, I'm not sure it quite does.
These scenes are not exactly what we saw in the first two episodes.
Yeah. I mean, for one thing, here, when they're arriving to the cabin, you get this fork in the road, and Joe thinks, well, there's not supposed to be one, and she decides to drive over the lake, which, oh my God, please, if I'm ever in the car, don't do something like this. We don't know for sure that that didn't happen back in episode one. I went back and rewatched these scenes, but you don't see it happen. It doesn't quite kind of feel like it. When they arrived in episode one, then it was like Alice is going to bed, and she gives her the story on the iPad, and you don't see anything repeated here. So it becomes a question of, does this fit together? Are we supposed to be thinking that it's the same reality? And at the end of the day, I'm not
I was
entirely
going to
sure.
ask you about that because in your rewatch, one of the things that you've even mentioned this to me before, sort of watch what people are wearing. Is Alice wearing the same pajamas that she was wearing when she goes to bed in episode one, right? Or is it like she's just in her clothes that they took the car trip in? That's one thing I'd be curious to know. I just didn't know if you picked up on that.
I don't have the definitive answer. I have to
You're
go
not
back
on
and check.
pajama watch.
I can follow up on the paintings.
Yes.
And I don't know if you
Ooh.
saw this. We published an article. I wrote up a little article we published
I
yesterday.
did read this today. This is very interesting to me.
We'd already talked about the information in the article anyway. I just thought, you know what, I'm going to take the time and put this together. Maybe it's of interest to people. So then at the end of episode four, you had the poor devil. I'm just going to call it the poor devil. That really they call their attention to. I went back, listeners last week maybe would have heard me say, like, I think maybe that used to be a different painting and I hadn't checked yet. I went back and checked. And yes, right? So when they arrive at the cabin in episode one, it's a different Hugo Simberg painting. It's the same artist, but it is what is widely regarded to be his most famous painting, The Wounded Angel. Also happens to be the name of Constellation episode one. All right, we can know that. You do see it in the background some other times, episode two and things like that. But the most interesting thing I discovered was that at the end of episode one, when she goes to the quote unquote other cabin, the painting on the wall seems like it is a mix of these two paintings. It's like the wounded angel, but instead of a wounded angel, it's a poor devil being carried on them.
So this is, I mean, yes, please go read this piece on the site. Cameron does a great job breaking down what we have seen and what potentially it could mean, and also what it could open up for interpretation later. But this idea of, okay, we got two famous paintings from Hugo Simberg. Obviously, this is not, this clearly past the well past the point of coincidence of this thing. So these certainly are there for a reason. They mean something. But this painting that apparently doesn't exist, but is a combination of both the angel and the devil, it was very interesting to me, and I think really hits on the theme of this episode, right? So in Christian tradition, devil was an angel, is a fallen angel, right? So it's sort of this same thing, but in different places, same thing, but in different perspectives, you could almost say, right? Even from the, I've got the angel and the demon on my shoulder when I'm thinking about decisions that I have to make. Sort of this idea of, as we referenced at the beginning, liminal spaces. You're in something that's between two places that you need to go. We talked about the how Joe plows through over the lake because she can't decide which of the two roads to take. So she takes neither. She just goes through and makes her own path. We've got these, obviously the Henry Budd piece that we're going to talk about. We've referenced Schrodinger's cat here in previous episodes. And then this quote when Bud, sorry, when Henry is talking to Irina earlier in the episode, they're talking about the cowl device. And she says to him, "What happens to one of the particles in an entangled pair determines what happens to the other, even if they are far apart." And they talk about the idea of liminal spaces. And so we're clearly dealing with something where it's not just separate dimensions, realities, universes, but these things are starting to blur. And we need to figure out why that's happening, particularly with Henry and Bud, particularly with two Alices, particularly with what's happened with Irina, what's happened with Joe. So we're starting to get a sense of what the theme is here they're trying to take us towards.
So quantum entanglement, it would be
Correct.
the term. There's a real thing with regard to electrons. Once again, though, I think that Constellation is taking to a macro level with regard to people,
Yes.
basically, is how it's being invoked. So if you follow that line, again, it's weird to say some things make more sense than others when I am about to start saying things like one version died in space and another one didn't, like that makes sense.
Yeah.
But that's the feeling I get, right? You have the version of Irina who died in space. There's pretty good evidence that a version of Joe died in space. I think there's decent evidence that a version of Henry died in space. There's the fact that on Henry's whiteboard it said death in space,
Yeah.
right?
Based on Alice's vision, there's a version of Henry who died in space and a version who didn't. Right. So we got some of this sort of both, yeah, these both sets. The Henry Bud one we need in a minute, we need to revisit because I don't quite understand that and we need to talk about it. But anyway, sort of
No,
this, I don't mean to sidetrack us.
No, the details there feel a little bit different. Maybe we just don't have all the information yet. with regard to Joe. That's one of my questions with going to where we started. Are these do these cabin scenes line up? Because if they don't, the implication potentially would be that we're now actually seeing another version of Joe, where I presume basically through the first four episodes at least, that we were always with quote unquote our Joe.
Yeah, so there was this, I guess that something needs to be determined. Were we always with our Joe, or are we always in our timeline? That's the one that we started with, right? Sort of which one did we end up with after the incident on the ISS?
Well, so I can provide some answers to that, I think. We have not all. So when we started out the show and we were seeing Magnus and Alice, that Magnus and that Alice were matched to who I would call our Joe, the one that we've been following. How do we know this? Well, if nothing else, Alice speaks Swedish and calls her mama, right? So this other Alice doesn't speak Swedish and doesn't call her mama, which I thought was a kind of a powerful ending to the episode.
Very.
But I hadn't really clocked the mama mommy thing before. She calls her mommy, not mama, right? But that is something that I think you could use to say, well, okay, which Alice is it? And by implication, like, which reality are we in?
If there was a way to sort of parse, which Alice. Or Alice is saying which things, embodying which things, can do certain things. Do we know which is which? But then that leads me to, again, to my the same question really I have about Henry and Bub, but on a deeper level about Alice. How can there possibly be two Alices in the same place? Or is where they are in this cabin, or is the device that they're with something that is blending or separating or interweaving these realities together for Joe, that she's seeing Alice. Both versions of Alice.
Yeah, and let's take Alice first because that's primarily where we've been, and then we'll move to Henry and Bud. How do we even pose the question? One of the things we were talking about last week was how could Alice possibly have this vision, if you will, of Joe's memorial? She didn't die in space. She didn't go to space, you know? And after we recorded, I had this thought that I shared with you. Well, if it's that the Joe, her Joe in her world died in space, that somehow she's piercing the veil of the weirdness and seeing what her reality, quote unquote, should be like. That might make some sense, but it doesn't resolve all the weirdness in the cabin scenes with the two Alices.
Yeah, it would make sense to me that, okay, I guess Joe in the timeline or Alice in the timeline where Joe died, but that Joe has moved over to another timeline, can sense these different realities because her mother opened them. That would be one thing, right? But then it almost is like these Alices exist in the same place. And that's what I'm having trouble wrapping my head around.
Same. Yeah, completely. Right. Now, I mean, another possibility is we get the replay of this in this episode towards the end. What Joe is playing back is footage of when Paul activated the CAL device on the ISS. And in that moment, Joe was talking to Alice remotely. Maybe that's relevant somehow to Alice's experience, action at a distance. Right, that's the whole thing. Quantum mechanics is so weird. Quantum entanglement is a spooky action at a distance. So maybe something like that, but beyond
And
this,
to
go ahead.
say the very last scene of this episode, where we see the Swedish speaking mama saying version of Alice, we don't explicitly know that she's in the same cabin location as the mummy Alice and the Joe that we're seeing throughout the episode, right? We just sort of, I guess, are led to believe that because she's hearing it. Joe is hearing it, but we don't know that.
And let me say this, whether she is or not, right? Because I think really probably where we should be going is back to notions of liminality and the in-between and the worlds are bleeding into one another and we can't make hard and fast distinctions. What is she doing out there?
Yeah, I have no idea. Yeah.
I mean, and you could line that up with the Alice that Joe finds in the cupboard at the end of episode one, right? Who also says mama.
Yep, that's right.
When Joe gets to that cabin, the cabin is cold, it's icy. I believe there's a dead cat in it for some reason, which maybe
Schrodinger's
Schrodinger's cat is it
cat?
is. It's, yeah, I mean, I think that might just be a wig. And that's the one with the weird painting, the mixed painting, you
Yeah.
know? So it's this kind of a big question that all of this relates to, where I'm not quite sure what to do with this. And then also to reference back to last week, the episode ended with that close-up shot of the poor devil. What reality did that relate to?
Exactly.
I don't know that
Exactly.
we have indications. And we also have the other cabin scene where Magnus takes Alice to the cabin.
Yes, which I, try to circle that square in my mind is that the same one that we're hearing at the end of episode five? And it's sort of making me feel like I need a lithium pill to try to figure this all out,
Yeah, well, so I think I wonder how much they're going to clear all this stuff up. And I don't know that they have to like lay it all out for us. I hope they don't spoon feed us. But you do get in this scene when they visit Skagerrak, and the title of the episode comes from how Wally says, "Well, we have to go out on the ocean to listen to these ghost tapes because 5 miles out the sound is clearest." And she refers to that as a liminal space,
Right.
which makes some sense conceptually.
Yeah.
So I think the cabin too, we're supposed to think of that
Cabin
way.
can be a liminal space or could be one of those spaces.
It's liminal in the sense that it is between civilization and wilderness,
Yes.
right? So that the way that they're shaping everything up, it seems like that is going to be the focal point of whatever resolution we're getting
Yeah.
in these various cabin scenes and think about how they hang together or don't.
So I don't know if we use this to as a way to transition is we're sort of talking back and forth between two realities of Joe and Alice, but even potentially a third. Are we to, we talked about this a couple episodes ago, are we to believe that with the existence of Henry and Bud, and one of them died apparently on Apollo 18, that there is another, that also is sort of a reference to a third dimension or reality, because we've clearly got two versions of the same character that are trying to, one of them's trying to intersect the other.
Yeah.
But if one of them died, how do we have two that exist that can communicate with one another?
Well, I mean, again, if you wanted to appeal to the many worlds interpretation of quantum mechanics, there would potentially be infinite Henry Calderas.
Right.
Talked about that a bit last week. I want to go back to that. What that's one of the big things I wonder, though, about what we're seeing in the show.
Yeah.
Is it two versions and a third that died in space, and that's all we should meaningfully be thinking about? Or should we be thinking about how, at least in that many worlds interpretation, there would be, infinite Henrys?
Yeah. Or are there in both versions of realities that we see, did they both die? Well, they both died, but that somehow both swapped and ended up, in the other's reality. Not to discount what there could be a many worlds theory, but that they both have died, therefore both crossed over into this reality that they find themselves in.
Yeah, and I mean, what's really interesting about these scenes in this episode for the first time, I find myself thinking more that they're in different realities, which is kind of odd because they're directly interacting.
Exactly.
But the fact that they're directly interacting through a mirror and stuff like that, and Bud says he's coming for Henry. I'm not entirely sure why he's mad at Henry. I don't know that they filled that in adequately in my mind.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just that he, Alice's, no, not Alice, Joe's comment about this guy used to be a drunk and a failure. Now he's not. So I wonder if the drunken failure one in the other reality sees this Nobel Prize winning, successful, well, moderately successful, still employed version of Henry and wants it to be that.
Yeah,
Maybe.
I guess. Yeah, something like this. Joe's comment's also weird because it implies that in her native reality, Henry became a failure and an alcoholic.
Yeah.
Yet in the opening episodes of the show, Henry was working at the command center.
Yeah, and that's what'll sort of blow your mind with this is we just don't know who was communicating with whom in what reality at that point.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing. Just trying to maybe we'll need all 8 episodes to
Yeah.
be able to go back and try to line this stuff up because now I just started thinking off the cuff, oh well, but actually maybe we were seeing a different reality when Henry was in the and how sure am I that he was in the same reality that was in our Joe's reality and all of that.
I'm telling you, just give me the just give me the pill. Just give me the lithium pill, you know.
We do get this bit of information that so Bud stopped taking his pills. We saw that he threw them in the ocean.
Yes.
He's also like trying to go to Thanksgiving with his daughter. I don't know what to do with that. And it apparently also has another sort of maybe daughter named Henrietta.
Yeah, we did see something about Henrietta, and I sort of took that as maybe, you know, Alice and Joe, there's some fractures there because Alice doesn't believe it's her Joe that's there. Bud's now dealing with decades of being in the place with her daughter who doesn't believe that, you know, that's really her dad, you know,
Maybe.
that's completely broken and she doesn't want anything to do with them, no Thanksgiving, you know, just maybe that's reading too much into it, but it's weird that, you know, he also has a daughter and there's some something there between them.
Yeah. What does seem, where I was going with this, though, is it does seem relatively confirmed that the lithium somehow blocks the interaction between the versions of
Yes.
Henry and Bud because Henry's mad at Bud because he stopped taking his pills. And it seems like because he stopped taking his pills, he's able to, make Henry piss his pants and whatever else. That's how it feels.
Yes. So the pills block it in some way, restrict it in some way. And then I also wonder, does the cowl open it back up? Or is that, you know, is that why Henry wants the cowl? What Joe wants to find out about the cowl? Does it sort of, is that the, you know, for lack of a better term, is that the portal between these things?
Yeah, I mean, I think there are suggestions along those lines. Let's talk about the cow more.
Okay.
When she went and stole it,
Yes.
I don't know, did that feel sufficiently motivated to you? Did it make sense to you that she was like, quick pit stop, gotta steal this cow device?
See, I was trying to think how much she. Clearly, she was there when the accident happened, saw that there was some experiment going on. But with all that's been going on with her, does she really have a concept of that's been so important to something else and to Henry and what's going on that she needs to go steal it? I didn't get a sense of she was that deep into the experiment or the understanding of it that she would need to more than just we got to find a way to get Joe and the cow together so some things can start to be
Yeah,
talked
I mean,
about.
I get it plot wise for sure,
Yeah.
but in terms of personal motivations, I suppose, she has some thought that, hey, there's some relation between whatever's going on and this cow device. I'm going to go steal it.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, she steals it very easily.
Yeah, where's the security around this thing?
No security whatsoever. I mean, I guess like she'd be allowed to be there because of her job and all of that, but
Yeah,
still.
but I mean, they've apparently got the librarian tasked with like calling the boss whenever somebody asks for a medical record. They're not going to have somebody watching the device that apparently opens up different realities. I mean,
Yeah. I mean, I guess
you're
only Henry cares about it, though. You know,
yeah,
like
that's true.
Irina doesn't think it's anything or
That's
what
true.
have you. I mean, he's still, I don't know. No, there's no, guy at the door to say, like,
Right.
hey, what's in your bag there?
Exactly. And you can just, when you go over the ferry, you can just put it under your car seat and no one's going to check for it. You know, that, why
Yeah,
not? Of
let's
course.
wave our hands at all of that. We wave our hands at all of that. What we do discover, though, is that the Cal device in proximity to these ghost tapes, which we should talk about more, actually,
Yeah.
clears them right up, which is interesting. But yeah, so we have to talk about the ghost tapes. You know, they go to Skagit Rock. Wally's pretty nice. Lawrence is, I don't know if he has dementia. Well, his sister says he has dementia.
Yeah, but
He's very
he's
suspicious.
listened to the tapes. Apparently, he does not believe this is the Joe that's supposed to be here and calls her a crisis actor.
Yeah, call the cops. She's a crisis actor.
Yep.
I don't know why I'd want to call the cops, though, because we also saw Joe reading that article about how these people are not only cranks, but criminals,
Exactly.
which probably tracks insofar as if, the established view of reality is one thing, and they're claiming that they've got these ghost tapes where they hear another version of what happened in space. Of course, they're going to be discredited.
Yeah. No, I thought it. I mean, I think we were right. Not a marine observatory in the true sense of the word. I mean, you have to have some version of this that exists to really send our protagonist on a path of, I've got to figure out what's going on here, why, so those tapes have to exist. But I was struck by Alice in those scenes. Alice really didn't want to be there. Really was saying all the time, let's go, get out, come on, let's go back. When are we going home? Can we leave? It's almost like she, there's something about Alice, I think, that's going to be uncovered. She understands something, senses something. She really did not want to be a part of that.
Yeah, I agree. In particular, she really wanted them to turn off the tapes, insisting that they're just noise, but she's kind of freaking out about it. And
Exactly.
I started wondering if she actually heard things better than what we were hearing or what exactly was going on there. And it's sort of interesting because then Wally gives, I think, all of the ghost tapes to Joe. But when they're in the car, Alice is, I don't know, very compassionate or what have you. And she ultimately puts a tape in.
Yeah, now that's true. That's true. She's the one that almost is like maybe that's what stood out to me, is she's so combative and aggressive while they're at the observatory and in the car. She becomes sort of compassionate, empathetic, talk to your mom about let's compartmentalize, put things in boxes, let's try to figure things out. So it just, I don't think there was a change in who that Alice was, but it's like she became someone different when she was left that observatory and just with her mother.
I mean, I don't think literally, maybe just start thinking about that a bit, that maybe Alice's mind is unmoored between realities and shifting around, even though it's possible, I guess. But I didn't get that sense so much. She's still concerned about the Thalia. I don't know why we're getting that term or name. I mean, it's a proper name. Has a proper name, it means like strong and healthy or something like that.
Which is, again, the opposite of what it is. So, what are we to lean into? How we lean into that? Is that a red herring? Who knows?
Yeah, I didn't find any other reference points. I mean, there's something called Thalia algebra, but I don't know that that helps, or maybe I just don't understand it. Good you reference to that, I suppose, but when she draws the picture, it would seem to be the same cosmonaut that
Correct.
Joe saw dead in space.
And that we hear on the tapes.
Yeah, Alice says that it's a Thalia on the tapes because the Thalia has been talking to her. I guess, so there is some notion of Al's having some perception that's cutting across
Yeah.
realities. And they
And
also
I really appreciated the last thing that they hear from this brother and sister at the observatory. She makes right before they leave this Alice in Wonderland reference, which is you're gonna have to believe six impossible things before breakfast. Sort of setting this on the stage of preparing them and us for there's some really crazy stuff coming that we're gonna have to accept when we finally see what's going on here.
It's a good catch for sure. Alice in Wonderland, which, if people haven't read the book, I recommend reading the book. You ever read the
Yeah,
book?
I read the book back when it was referenced to when Lost was on. I reread it, read it
Oh
then.
yeah. And Through the Looking Glass also.
Yeah.
Lewis Carroll was a linguist and a logician. His name was like Dodson or something. I'd have to double
Interesting.
check
Yeah.
that. Lewis Carroll's a pseudonym. So it's just all these games with language. I mean,
Yeah.
I guess maybe it comes across in the animated film version to some degree, but yeah, lots of good stuff in there. So if we're now being told that when we think about Alice, we should also be thinking about Alice from Alice in Wonderland. She going to take us through the looking glass? I suppose.
Yeah, or as Alice was the key to that story, clearly is Alice the key to ours, and there's something deeper there. I think even just the sense of casting that role as twins, right? I think we should know that this is twins playing this role, and that's often done when you're dealing with a baby or a toddler, or one of them's fussy and you need to get the other one to step whatever. But for an 11, 12-year-old, I think that is going to come into play sometime in the next
I
few episodes.
keep wondering whether one of them's playing one version and the other's playing the other version
Yeah, I think so.
that consistently. And maybe, I don't know if I could get get Michelle McLaren on the phone or something and ask that question, but I wonder, it is interesting that they've cast twins here.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it tracks that way or if it doesn't. It did occur to me just now, though, also, Henry and Bud are communicating through a mirror.
Yeah.
There's a looking glass, right?
There's a
There's a
looking glass.
looking
Yeah,
glass. Yeah.
absolutely.
We got
I'm gonna have
references.
to go read that over the next
I
couple
mean,
weeks.
I don't know if there's a clue in Alice in Wonderland to find. Certainly back to the paintings. I don't know if there's really a clue there either. I just think it's really interesting that that detail is there. And I'm thinking about how to ultimately interpret that and how to line things up. And I'm really just enjoying how rich this show is and the
Yeah.
fact that it is making me feel like, oh, I need to go back and rewatch that scene, that
Exactly.
sort of
That
thing.
that's the good stuff right there, just to make those connections and where you can translate or transpose over different episodes and make you wonder about that stuff and not sure where it's going. I can't speculate on that right now. Just, curious to see where the journey ends.
Indeed, right? And that is one, in narrative terms, we end this episode with Alice trucking through the snow and she calls out Mama. Any speculation about how that would make sense? Like what she would be doing and why?
I'm trying to think if I even can understand if that's in a world where she went to the cabin with Magnus or when she went to the cabin with Joe. And I just have no sense of unless Alice is just lost in this liminal space and something has happened to her that's, caused her to be trapped there. She can't get on one of the two roads, so she's stuck out on the ice, just like Joe did when she was driving there, that she's just trying to get out somewhere.
Yeah, I guess. It's hard to imagine her getting all the way to the cabin on her own,
Yeah.
because I started thinking, oh, maybe this is a version of Alice who's looking for her mother, who's like missing in her reality and out of the cabin calling for mama or something. But that
Yeah.
doesn't quite make sense, doesn't quite line up. So I guess we'll just have to see.
Yeah, three more to go.
Got three more to go here, and we'll be back next week talking about episode 6. So I hope everyone joins us. Please do, follow TV Obsessive on social media. Subscribe to the YouTube channel at TV Obsessive, and we'll see you next week.